Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to order. And we are very pleased that we have an exciting piece of legislation to take up and some very unusual and dynamic witnesses with us. So I will open a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 4. And Mr. Stembridge, I should say that we have by telephone one of our witnesses who's going to be testifying shortly. So that's why you're hearing a little feedback on the over the microphone. Mr. Stembridge, would you like to tell us about this piece of legislation?
This is House Joint Resolution 4. Upon approval by voters at the November 2008 general election, HJR 4 would amend the Oregon Constitution by removing a provision on elector voter qualifications. This is a provision that includes a six-month residency, 21-year minimum age, and the ability to read and write English for voting on school measures. I apologize for some of the interference we're getting on the phone here. Evan, are you watching or are you listening on the?
I'm not. I'm hearing it through the phone.
All right. Okay. Well, we apologize for interference here, and we'll.
That's all right.
Try it. We're going to try to power through it.
It's probably keep yourself.
Okay, so HJR 4 came to us from the Secretary of State, but that was its official route, but I think its real story is somewhat different, and that's what we're about to hear from our witnesses this morning. So we have two people in the room, Hannah Fisher and Ethan Gross. Did you want to come up together? And then on the phone, we have Evan Pulvers, who is... Evan, where are you located?
I'm in Rhode Island.
Who is, I think, away at college in Rhode Island, and so she will be testifying by telephone. Good morning, Ethan. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning.
And go ahead in whatever order you have arranged.
All right. I'd just like to start off by saying that we're here in support of HJR 4, which would remove from the Oregon Constitution the provision that requires those that vote in school board elections to meet a age requirement, literacy requirement, and residency requirement.
And we need you to just identify yourself for the record before you testify.
I'm sorry. My name is Ethan Gross.
And I'm Hannah Fisher.
Great.
Last year, we were a part of Grant High School's Constitution team, and it came to our attention that these provisions still existed. So we formed a special interest group of students and decided to research while they were still there and kind of the history behind them.
So, you know, we took on this class project and compiled a lengthy letter to the Secretary of State, Bill Bradbury, calling this to his attention, and he was so kind as to refer to the Elections Committee of the House.
Which is why we're here today.
Great. Well, go ahead.
The state of Oregon has over time allowed more citizens the right to vote. Part of the evolution came in 1948 when Oregon displayed its egalitarian views on election equality by changing the voter requirements in school board elections to include those who didn't own property or stock in tax-paying corporations, though you still had to be 21 and pass a literacy test, both standard requirements at the time. In 1960, the Constitution was amended to allow the state to make laws requiring electors to be taxpayers. It included a provision to exclude Article 8, Section 6, so that all citizens could vote in school board elections, regardless of their taxpaying status.
In 1974, literacy tests were eliminated and the voting age was lowered to 18 in the Oregon Constitution in Article 2, Section 2. However, there is still an express exception for Article 8, Section 6 in Article 2, Section 2. It is in our Constitution, though not enforced, that to vote in school board elections, one must be 21 and able to prove competency in English literacy. This remains the only exception to the current voter requirements in the Oregon Constitution, despite age and literacy not being issues in the original reasoning for the amendment in 1948. Why has this antiquated elector criteria established in Article 8, Section 6 remained in light of the evolving requirements to participate in any other election?
My name is Evan Pulvers, and I'm going to jump in here. Article 8, Section 6 involves three provisions, an age requirement, a residency requirement, and a literacy requirement. Granted, there is no express federal constitutional or statutory bar to a requirement that you must be 21 to vote in a local election. The 26th Amendment, lowering the voting age to 18, does not apply to local elections. However, the requirements of due process and equal protection lead to the conclusion that the age requirement for school district elections in Oregon is unconstitutional. The requirement deprives all persons under 18 of their liberty without due process of law by abridging their voting rights entirely on their age.
Regarding the residency requirement, the Oregon Attorney General issued an opinion in 1972 concluding that it is unconstitutional and unenforceable. To deny a citizen of their right to vote based upon their ability to pass a district-issued literacy test is a violation of due process. Article 8, Section 6 of the Oregon Constitution deprives citizens of voting age of a right which is fundamental to our society. To comply with the federal Constitution's 14th Amendment, laws must be fair, clear, and reasonable. While this law is painstakingly clear, it is both unfair and unreasonable. Article 8, Section 6 is unfair because it blatantly discriminates against non-English speakers and learning disabled citizens, many of whom are low income. Literacy is not a prerequisite for voting in the United States. It is unfair to require citizens of this state to pass a literacy test for school district elections, while placing no such regulation on any other election. Not all citizens in Oregon are literate. It is unreasonable to require them to be. This law is arbitrary and capricious, and thus is a violation of the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
The Voting Rights Act of 1965 does not legally bind Oregon, but it should be used as a guide for Oregon to follow. In fact, Section 4A of the Act reads as follows. To assure the right of the citizens of the United States to vote is not denied or abridged on account of race or color, no citizen shall be denied the right to vote in any federal, state, or local election because of his failure to comply with any test or device in any state. And subsection D states, for purposes of this section, no state or political subdivision shall be determined to have engaged and the use of tests or devices for the purpose of or with the effect of denying or abridging the right to vote on account of race or color.
Education and schools are an integral part of in any community, and the social environment can often be told from the status of the schools within it. This relationship between the two means that everyone has an interest in schools and youth, even 18-year-olds. We note that the highest goal of education is to breed good citizens and vice versa. It is hypocritical of the state to train students to be citizens and then not allow them to be citizens upon their 18th birthday. Although we understand that Article 8, Section 6 of the Oregon Constitution is not currently enforced, we believe that to keep such a provision in the Oregon Constitution, as it is now, is to betray the spirit of a constitutional government. A constitution is a living document. It's an evolving document, and it's a document that puts the beliefs and practices of the state into writing. As it stands now, the Oregon Constitution does not live up to these standards. We note that the highest goal of education is to breed good citizens, and we hope that this will be put forth and accepted. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Well, we are certainly very grateful that you brought this to the Secretary of State's attention and to ours. And I believe that if this were to pass through the legislature, this would be on the ballot in the next November general election. Is that right, Mr. Administrator?
Yes, Chair Rosenbaum and members. This would be, the way this is written up, it would be a November 2008 general election.
So I think just before anybody raises this issue in terms of cost or fiscal impact, what would that be?
Chair Rosenbaum, members, the legislative fiscal has put a standard amount on these, which we can find out what it is, but you can probably see that it depends on how many other issues are going forward for that election. The marginal cost may not be all that great for putting an additional referral on.
And that's because we wouldn't be holding, and we would be holding an election in any case, and this would just be one more issue. So the only cost would presumably be the voters' pamphlet pages that would be devoted to.
That's correct.
Is that right? Okay, great. Are there any questions for our panel of witnesses? Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's more of a comment than a question. This was very well presented to the point where it's hard to have any questions. You kind of dotted every I and crossed every T, and I appreciate your work on this.
Thank you.
Representative Berger.
A comment, Madam Chair, if you don't mind. I was asked to be one of the judges of the We the People contest at the regional. And if you're asked, say yes. It will humble and delight you, and you will be blown away. This is the champion team, but they were all champions, every team that I heard from. And I walked away thinking, boy, there's a whole bunch of legislators and policymakers coming up behind us who are far better, more knowledgeable coming in than we could ever hope. So congratulations to this team, and thank you for your good work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Finding something that needed to be found.
Representative Hunt.
I thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering that after this is passed out, if you all are available to get on a couple of other issues I'm working on, because I'd love to have you as advocates.
Of course.
Always looking for staff, aren't
you? And actually, apropos of Representative Berger's comment, I think it's very timely that you're appearing before us this morning, because I provided committee members with an article from today's Oregonian that indicated that the current year's team from Grant High School just won the statewide competition. I wonder if you would like to tell us a little bit about what the program consists of and your participation in it.
The program is absolutely amazing. I couldn't agree more. It's just absolutely amazing. It really does breed citizens in the best way possible. It's so important, and I've never experienced anything like it in my life. And they're working incredibly hard right now preparing for nationals. They work harder every year because the competition gets tougher every year.
And I don't know how many of you are very familiar with the We the People competition, but it's structured like a legislative hearing. And
Just like this.
And the topics range from the philosophical and historical basis of the Constitution to current events.
To the Bill of Rights.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Wow.
Great. And Ethan and Hannah, I understand that you were members of last year's team.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. I was too.
And as well as Evan. Okay, great. And so are you still involved in the program, or are you in college now? Can you tell us what you're doing currently?
We're both Hannah and I are at Portland State University. And I know I have. I'm not sure if Hannah has gone back.
Of course I have.
We've gone back and worked with those that are participating in it this year. We've, you know, practiced mooting with them, asking them questions about...
We pretended we were the judges. It was a great role reversal.
Evan, go ahead.
I'm at Brown University this year, and I just started school. And but I went back and watched them and mooted them, and it's a lot of fun to go back and do that.
Great. Great. And Evan, I believe that your dad, Roy Pulvers, is in the audience here this morning in the hearing room with us. So
he is.
He's listening and very proud of you, I know.
Wondering why you're not in class.
I am missing class.
For a very good reason. Representative Roblin?
No.
Representative Esquivel?
Yes. The first thing that comes to my mind on this, when you say the ability to read and write English, is my step-grandfather. He was from Mississippi. Couldn't read or write. Man never got an opportunity to vote in his life. It was a tragic shame because he worked very hard, lived to be in his 70s. Not once did that man ever get to vote. Very smart man, but very uneducated, because in Mississippi, he was allowed to drop out of school in the third grade. So hopefully this will help someone from Mississippi or Oregon or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent example of why it's completely outrageous to have something like this on the books.
Just for what it stands for.
Well, I do have a concern, though.
Go ahead.
Chair, I do have a concern, though, if
Representative Esquivel.
If we had this in front of you and I was to read it, to vote on it, how could I do so? That's a concern. Could you, someone explain that to me?
Bill Clinton, by executive order, issued an order that if you don't speak English, he's made it possible for voting pamphlets to be available in many, many languages. And also there's governmental assistance if you go to the county commissioner's office. There's assistance if you can't read or if you can't write, or if the pamphlet isn't printed in your language. There's always a way to get access to a ballot.
Well, Madam Chair.
Great, Representative Esquivel, follow-up?
It's a mail-out ballot. And it has nothing to do with speaking English. It says read and write.
Organize vote by mail, but you also do have the opportunity to go to the county elections office. And you can get help in any way that's possible because it's available.
Well, if my grandpa were alive, I'd read it for him.
That's right.
That's another solution.
Then you'd have to be reading.
Representative Brugger.
Madam Chair, good luck, representatives. These kids have got the answers. As a judge, I can guarantee you can't come up with a question that they can't answer.
That is part of the competition, I
think. It is very much part of the competition. Yeah.
Why do you think they were number one?
Do we have any additional questions for our witnesses? Well, we want to really, really thank you for bringing this issue forward. It's clearly something that is an anachronism in our Constitution, and speaking for myself anyway, I think we do need to address it at the earliest opportunity. Although we are in a public hearing this morning, so we won't be voting on it, I'm quite confident we'll be taking it up very soon and acting on it. So, Representative Roblin.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask one thing. When you go back to Portland State and in Brown, if you would continue to read our Constitution, because I believe there are a number of other places
I'm a political science major.
That have inconsistencies with the new the way our Constitution has continued to grow through the initiative process. There are parts of it, I think, that have some not as glaring inconsistencies as this might be, but you might find others, and that would be helpful for us.
You may see us back again.
Okay.
Great. Well, thank you again, and please carry our admiration and thanks to your teacher and to the other students in the program as well. And Evan, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule back at Brown to join us this morning.
Thank you for allowing me speak.
Great. Okay, and I will adjourn the public. I'm sorry, Mr. Stembridge. Go ahead.
Members and Chair Rosenbaum, I just wanted to point out, as far as the documents concerning this measure are concerned, we have a letter to Secretary Bradbury. This, we believe, is close to the original letter that was sent. We've not been able to find the original letter, so wanted to point that out for the record and for those who are looking at the background for this measure. We believe this to be the same letter that was sent to the Secretary of State.
And this is a letter signed by one of the students, Evan Pulvers, just raising basically the same issues, I think, that we heard this morning in the testimony. So I assume
they showed at the end these 33 boxes, and those were originally filled in with the rest of the team.
Oh, great. Yeah, we do have a signing page on the back that is blank, but I'll assume that had the support of everyone in your class.
Absolutely.
It sure did.
Great. Okay, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Anything further, Mr. Stembridge?
Just one thing. I noted that Evan worked the word granted into her testimony, which I thought was very clever.
Okay. I'll close the public hearing on HJR 4. And committee members, we will not be meeting on Friday morning. I'm sure you will be able to put that time to good use on your schedule. So there's nothing further to come before us this morning. Yes, Representative Roblin.
I would request that, if it's at all possible, when you assign a carrier, when this comes to a hearing, that maybe we can invite some people back to even speak. We've done that a few times with permission on the floor,
mm-hmm.
To have guests on the floor to speak to a particular bill. And I think this is one of those cases where that might be something that we could consider.
I'd love to do that.
That would be absolutely amazing.
We'll see if we can arrange that.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
But remember, those representatives stand up and question the carrier.
That's right.
We're ready for
that. That's fast and ready.
I think they're more than up to that to that challenge. Okay, well, thank you very much for being here. There's nothing further to come before us this morning. We are adjourned.